Now, the four plagues that came from the sounding of the four trumpets of the angels have passed. And since people, as we saw, that eagle flying in mid-heaven, who proclaimed a call to repentance, did not repent, and will not repent, the unleashing of the remaining three plagues continues, and these are fearful indeed. And so we come to the fifth plague. It is in the ninth chapter, and I will read it to you. The fifth angel sounded his trumpet, and I saw a star that had fallen from heaven to the earth. And to him was given the key to the shaft of the abyss. And he opened the shaft of the abyss, and smoke rose up out of the shaft, like the smoke of a great burning furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the shaft. And out of the smoke came locusts upon the earth, and they were given power, like the power that the scorpions of the earth have. And they were told not to harm the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only those people who do not have the seal of God upon their foreheads. And it was given to them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. And in those days men will seek death and will not find it. And they will long to die, and death will flee from them. The locusts in their appearance were like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were what looked like crowns resembling gold, and their faces were like human faces. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like the teeth of lions. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots, of many horses, charging into battle. They have tails like scorpions, with stingers, and in their tails they have the power to harm people for 5 months. They have as king over them the angel of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek he bears the name Apollyon. The first woe has passed. Behold, two more woes are still to come after these things. In this plague, as you have seen, and I am not translating it phrase by phrase, because the passage is rather long, and we will translate it in sections as we analyze them. In this plague, as you have grasped it, we have something deeply mysterious. No one knows for certain, and I will repeat something I said the last time, whether one ought to interpret it allegorically or literally. According to the letter, for contemporary events truly press one to accept this literal interpretation, however dangerous it may be to keep correlating the book of the Apocalypse with the present moment, whatever moment that may be. Yet I think it is equally dangerous to insist constantly that the interpretation of the Apocalypse must remain outside one's own era, when that very era itself presses the matter, so that this interpretation must be given. For instance, I heard something a few days ago. A friend of mine was telling me that certain ones were commenting upon me, the demons, namely, that I could fall into delusion by interpreting the Apocalypse. But if we are afraid, shall we ever interpret the book of the Apocalypse at all? Out of fear of delusion, it is equally a delusion not to take up this book at all, out of fear of falling into delusion. This too is a delusion, you understand? Of course, as one observes in all the interpreters, both ancient and more recent, whenever there is something they do not understand, they leave it aside. They do not force it. They do not pull at it. But also, what we were saying a previous time, last time, what St. Andrew of Caesarea says, that in each generation people will understand these things, and then they will say that this is what the Apocalypse speaks of. So something we do not understand today simply means its hour has not yet come. It will be understood tomorrow, next year, in the next 50 years, and so on. In any case, in the future, I say this because many are afraid to take up this book, and our church, of course, did not place this book among her liturgical readings. Out of fear, because in the East, they found in the soil of the Apocalypse the heretical poison they wanted to serve up. Above all, chiliasm. Not, of course, chiliasm as it is shaped today, but in the sense of a thousand-year reign of Christ upon the earth, which is also the ancient form of chiliasm. This does not mean, however, that because there were heretics who exploited this book, the book itself should not be opened. The proof is that, although the church did not use it liturgically, because she was being battered by heresies, she nevertheless placed it within the canon of the New Testament. For it is the book of John, the evangelist. This book is divinely inspired. And if we take into account that already at the very beginning of his book, the holy evangelist says, "Blessed is the one who reads and those who hear." Blessed is the one who reads and those who hear, as if to say that those who do not read and do not hear are not blessed. And further, it is the book that comes to help us the faithful, to understand each age, our own age, and to await the things that are already being awaited, and to prepare ourselves for the things for which we ought to prepare. It is therefore a very useful book, even if you see this difficulty in moving forward to interpret something. This is a general difficulty. And besides, as we said, in each age we can understand more and more. This very book of the Apocalypse, 50 years ago, was far more incomprehensible than it is today, when, I repeat, these very events themselves press us to interpret, or to understand, this book. But let us look at the text progressively, my beloved. And the fifth angel sounded the trumpet, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. I saw, says the sacred evangelist, a star, a single star, falling from heaven down to the earth. What is this star? Truly, the interpretation of this star gives us the very key to understand this plague, which is so complex, so mysterious, so terrible. But, as Arhedas of Caesarea writes, this fallen star, the star that fell, is nothing other than the devil himself. The star fallen from heaven, Arhedas of Caesarea writes, is the devil. So then, it is the devil who falls from heaven down upon the earth. Indeed, this recalls that passage of Isaiah 14:12, where of course Isaiah is referring to a historical person, but the historical person does not fulfill the prophecy. Therefore, there is a further fulfillment, and so he is a type of what lies behind the historical person, of the Babylonians, for example, their king, who shattered Palestine, and the known world, and whose heart was lifted up, Nebuchadnezzar. But behind Nebuchadnezzar stands the devil, of whom Nebuchadnezzar is the type. How did he fall? Asks Isaiah from heaven, the morning star, the one who rises at dawn. You see, these are words that would not fit the Babylonian king, even though that is who is being addressed there, that is who is being addressed. But he looks beyond Nebuchadnezzar. He sees the devil. How did he fall? He says, from heaven, the morning star, the bearer of the dawn, the one who rises at dawn. Rising, that is what the morning star means, the bearer of the dawn, the one who rises in the morning. It is the dawn star. He was shattered upon the earth. So then, behold, the devil falls and is shattered upon the earth. This being shattered is, of course, relative, since the devil is a spirit. He fell upon the earth, shattered by his own egoism, fallen, as one prayer says, from the light-bearing realm above, that is, from the country of the light of the glory of God. But the Lord too spoke with the very same words about this fall of the devil. I beheld Satan fall as lightning from heaven. I beheld. And what depth this I beheld carries. When did the Lord behold back then? When he was falling. When he was falling before man was made. Now, with his incarnation having come. Or, in a prophetic manner, when the devil shall be cast into the lake of fire, at the last judgment, and the devil shall be judged, as the Lord says, Depart from me, you cursed, into the outer fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. Which has been prepared for the devil and his angels, his demons. When does the Lord see the fall then, before, now, or in the future? There are three phases, and the Lord spoke of all three. I beheld Satan fall as lightning from heaven. Having fallen like lightning from heaven. Luke 10:18. So then, this concerns the fall of Satan, who shall act upon the earth in an evil-doing manner. And there was given to him the key of the shaft of the abyss. He was given the key of the well of the abyss. Shaft means a well, of the well of the abyss. Satan, as you will know, never does anything without divine permission and concession. Remember what happened with Job. The devil enters into dialogue with God. A dialogue is arranged here. That Job serves God, because his motive is transactional, a matter of give and take. God gave him wealth, gave him health, gave him many good things, happiness, and that is why he hymns and glorifies God. No, says God, Job glorifies me, and even if he were not wealthy, take away his wealth, and you will see. Will he glorify you, or will he bless you? See what word he uses, or will he bless you? It is the inverse, like calling vinegar sweet, the inverse, or will he blaspheme you? But Holy Scripture never uses the word blaspheme. You will not easily find this word in Holy Scripture. God says, if you wish, test him. Will you give me permission? I give it to you. Take care. You will not touch anything but his bodily integrity, his health. My beloved, within a single day, the devil, forgive me, brought upon Job a devastation without precedent. If you read the first chapter of Job, you will be astonished at the speed with which the devil acted within a single day to bring devastation upon Job. His children, 10 children, are feasting at the house of one of the brothers. A wind blows, the house collapses, and crushed and killed them all. And the news reaches Job, "All your children have been killed." Then comes the flock, the sheep, the goats, the donkeys, the camels, and so on. All of it within a single day. If the devil were left free, he would literally turn the universe upside down. His destructive activity is that terrible. The angels do not allow it. God does not permit it. The devil cannot. I will put it bluntly. Forgive me, he cannot even enter into the swine. Not even into the swine, he had to ask permission. "Permit us," he says, "Lord, to enter into the pigs," when the demons came out of the Gergesene, that wretched man. And what did the Lord say? "Go," he concedes. He grants the permission. So they do not have permission, my beloved, even to enter into swine. But why does God grant it? Because of the impenitence of human beings. In Job's case, no. There lies the problem of theodicy. But it is not the moment to speak to you about that. Only this much. Nothing happens except with God's permission, and this is because of the impenitence of human beings. What do we observe? Christ allowed the demons to enter the swine in order to punish the Gergesenes, because they were raising pigs in spite of the law's prohibition. Why now does God allow the devil to fall upon the earth? Not only does he fall crushed from the light-bearing realm above, but also so that he may pour out, may unleash, all his malice upon the earth, because of the impenitence of human beings. Notice too how the punishment is addressed to the sinners. "Go into the outer darkness," there where it was prepared for the devil and his angels, which means go together, not somewhere else, not somewhere separate. Go together, because since you do not keep my commandments, I now permit the devil to bring destruction upon you. Note this here, that in hell, if one were to attempt a description of hell, if such a description can even be made, if it can. But this is what the fathers say, "My beloved, the demons will enter and exit the condemned human beings, since they themselves are spirits." While human beings will be there with their bodies, because we have the resurrection of the dead, they will enter and exit the human person. And even as they themselves are being punished, they will also strike the human beings, and will try to find some relief, some refuge from the fire of hell by going into the human beings. The sinners. It is terrifying. And these people will not only be punished by the fire of hell, but also by the presence of the demons. How terrible it is to have the devil within oneself. Only those who have experienced it can tell you. It is an unbearable condition. What is this abyss? It is the place where the demons dwell. When the Lord healed the Gergesene, that wretched demon possessed man. What did the demons beg as they came out? That he would not command them to depart into the abyss, that he would not order them to leave, to go away, to go into the abyss. What does abyss mean here? It is the shaft, as the holy evangelist sees it in his vision. This is the abyss. It is the shaft, this well, and the shaft, the well, is an opening. So here the abyss is likened to a well that has an opening, and the lower part has no bottom. Etymologically, the word abyss means without bottom. So the mouth of the abyss begins at the earth and is lost in chaos. There is nothing, no floor, no depth, and this is called the abyss. But it means that the key of the abyss was given, the key of the abyss, as though this well had been sealed and locked. And now the key is given to the devil to open the shaft of the abyss. That is, to open this well so that something may come out. It is the authority given to the devil for the evil powers to act upon the earth, because of the sins of men and their apostasy. When Pilate said to him, "You do not speak to me," to the Lord, "Do you not know that I have authority over you, to crucify you, or to release you?" The Lord said, "You have no authority over me. The authority was given to you." So then authority was given to the devil for the reason we explained earlier. And what now is this authority of Satan upon the earth? To bring about whatever evil he can. One form of the evil he is to bring upon the earth is disasters, wars, but also. And pay attention to this last point, because this is what he wants to analyze further on. A plague, the dreadful plague that surpasses human thought, the dreadful manner of life of men upon the earth. To such a degree, as we will see further on, that they will wish to die. Though the instinct for life is very strong, and no one would ever want to die. They will wish to die, and yet death will not come. So we have a dreadful manner of life upon the earth. It is the same as in hell, where people would wish to be non-existent, but they cannot. As Father Justin Popovich says, men condemn God to death, not only upon the cross, my beloved, not only upon the cross. Let us not say that the Jews are to blame. We Christians are also to blame. When the Apostle Paul says, crucifying afresh the Son of God, we crucify the Son of God again, and you know what they say. God is dead. When I arrive at atheism, what have I done? I have made a proclamation of these deaths of God. Now listen, men condemned God to death, and God condemned men to immortality. There is nothing more dreadful, because if a man dies, he is no longer punished. How then can he be punished since he has died? Man remains immortal, and he is punished within that immortality, and so people live upon the earth. But they live in a horrifying way, as you will see in what follows. And this is the dreadful plague, the fifth dreadful plague. He opened the shaft of the abyss, and smoke went up out of the shaft like the smoke of a great furnace burning, and the sun and the air were darkened from the smoke of the shaft. He opened the well of the abyss, and smoke ascended from the well, like the smoke of a burning furnace. A furnace, from the smoke, the sun was darkened, and the air was polluted. This means that the devil rejoices in causing devastation. This is the smoke of the shaft. It is all the calamities of a modern war. The rising smoke covers even the sun itself and pollutes the surrounding air. If we were to compare a corresponding fresco from Dionysio Monastery on the Holy Mountain, which was depicted, painted under divine inspiration more than 300 years ago, in the 17th century, we would find it very hard not to recognize that the smoke rising out of that fresco at Dionysio Monastery looks just like a mushroom cloud, the kind that brings to mind the explosion of the atomic bomb at Hiroshima in 1945. We would find that very hard to deny. I am sorry. I do have this photograph, but I am sorry we have no way to show it. I have other photographs of the monastery of Dionysio as well, and we have no way for you to see them. That is to say, it is the threat of a nuclear war, the destructive effects of which we have, as a kind of sample in Hiroshima, a nuclear war which appears, both from the prophecy and from events themselves, to be unavoidable. This presence of the devil's activity within human history reminds us, and I will say it again, of the devastation he inflicted on Job. He inflicts it because he cannot bear to see man called a child of God, and all the more so after the sacrifice of Christ by which the adoption of man took place. And out of the smoke locusts came forth upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Out of the smoke, he says, locusts came forth upon the earth, and to these locusts was given power such as the scorpions have. That is, what do scorpions do? They sting people with their tail, with their stinger. And this is what the locusts now have. And it was said to them that they should not harm the grass of the earth. It was said to them not to harm the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God upon their foreheads. That they should bring no harm to the plant kingdom, but only to those people who do not have the seal of God. A scorpion strikes a person, attacks him, falls upon him, just as when a scorpion injects its venom into a person, and he is in great pain, how much more will the one suffer who is struck by these mysterious locusts? And this will go on for 5 months. And in those days, in those very days, people will search for death and will not be able to find it. They will long to die. And yet, death will flee from them, and they will not be able to die. This terrible plague, terrible in its consequences, as you can see, recalls the Egyptian pharaonic plague that is mentioned, the eighth plague of Pharaoh, which also speaks of locusts. Listen carefully, as I read you a small portion from that old Egyptian plague. And the Lord brought a south wind upon the land. That is, he sent a wind from the south. And the south wind took up the locust. It carried it from the desert into Egypt, and brought it over all the land of Egypt, and covered the face of the land. It covered the face of the earth, and the land was laid waste. The locust devoured the whole plant kingdom, every growing thing, and it ate up every herb of the land, and all the fruit of the trees that had been left by the hail. Whatever had been left over from the hail of the previous plague, the seventh, the locust devoured it. This is what the plague of the apocalypse calls to mind. The pharaonic plague. Locusts there, locusts here, yet there are certain differences. First, the harm is explicitly said to fall upon human beings, and not upon man's surroundings, such as the plant kingdom. And how was this made clear to them? They were given authority to harm only human beings, not the plant kingdom. Second, the actions of the locusts are tormenting to human beings, because they act like scorpions, whereas the locust is not venomous. The harm, it is expressly stated, will fall upon the people who do not have the seal of God upon their foreheads. And fourth, the form of these locusts will not be the familiar form, as is mentioned a little further on. We shall see in the description, we know the locust, that insect, but here we have a strange, peculiar form. And this gives us reason to think that this locust has nothing to do with the locust we know from the animal kingdom. Rather, it is an allegory. Although there is an Arabic proverb that says of the locust, listen carefully, if you take one of these large locusts and look at it closely, that the locust resembles, at the head, a horse, at the chest, a lion. Try to picture the locust in your mind, since you remember it. At the legs, a camel. Its legs look like the legs of a camel. At the body, a serpent. Its body looks like a snake. And at the antennae, the hair of a woman. That is, its antennae look like long hair, the hair of a woman. As the passage here itself says, that these locusts also had hair like the hair of a woman. But now let us look at these strange locusts of the apocalypse. And what we have already observed, which interests us very much, is that they have nothing to do with the locusts we know. This is what I wanted us to grasp, and that the corresponding plague of Pharaoh is nothing other than a type of the final plague, the plague of the last things. Hold on to this point as well. The very description that follows now, you will see, has nothing to do with the locusts we know. And the likenesses of the locusts, says the holy evangelist, continuing his description. He does not say the locusts, but the likenesses of the locusts, those things that resemble locusts, locusts. So the holy evangelist comes to tell us that they are not locusts at all, since they do not eat grass, but only afflict human beings. So these likenesses are similar. These likenesses similar to horses prepared for war. They look like horses ready for battle. And upon their heads were crowns like gold. On their heads they have crowns that look like gold, but they are not gold. And their faces were as the faces of men. Their faces look like human faces. And they had hair, the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. Their teeth were like the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron. Here the breastplates of these locusts were like iron, iron breastplates. Hold on to this. Iron breastplates. And the sound of their wings, the sound, the noise, the clatter of their wings, was as the sound of chariots of many horses running into battle. Like horses and chariots charging into war. That is what existed back then. There was no other way to express it. The rush of a military assault, that is why he places horses and chariots running into battle. Such is the sound of the wings of these mysterious beings. And they have tails like scorpions, that resemble scorpions and stings. Little stingers, like the sting of a bee or a wasp. And in their tails they have power to harm men 5 months. To sting people, as you will see in that fresco I mentioned to you. Where each locust grabs a man, depicted schematically there, stings him. And down he falls. Another man it stings, and down he falls, and this for 5 months. They have a king over them. They have a king, the angel of the abyss. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon. In Greek he bears the name Apollyon. So we have seen, my beloved, that from the description the holy evangelist gives us, these are clearly not the insects we know, but either beings or satanic machines. Besides, I will repeat what I said. He speaks of likenesses, which means it is not a locust, but something that looks like a locust. What can these locusts be? We have very serious indications that we are dealing with flying, noise-making machines that will fly and scatter harm and destruction among men. With these descriptions, we have little difficulty in saying that the locusts bear a striking resemblance to airplanes. If you look at an airplane, you will see it looks like a locust. The noise of its wings, especially when we have supersonic aircraft, is so terrible, so demonic, that it recalls battle chariots charging into war. The airplanes pass over our city, especially at certain points along their flight path, their course. The spot where we are is one such point on the airplane's route. I happen to live somewhere nearby, and I know it is an airplane, and that right now it is passing overhead. But when it passes at that supersonic speed, since I know it and it is not the first time I am hearing it, when it passes and the boom comes from behind it, because first the plane passes, and then the boom arrives, it truly shatters your nerves. You know that cows and animals, especially cows, stop giving milk when such an aircraft passes overhead. This has been confirmed. Their milk dries up. It is known, it has been observed, as I told you. Even infants in their cradles are terrified. All of this has likewise been observed. But since I know what it is, you might ask me, why does it affect me? Because I was present at a strafing once. I was right next to a place that was strafed by an aircraft once upon a time. By what kind of aircraft? Spitfires. Go figure. From back in 1944, 1945. My beloved, can you imagine? Can you imagine many such aircraft up in the sky? From the noise of these aircraft alone, they do not even need to drop bombs, and what bombs they are. From the noise alone, one freezes and truly goes mad. And if this is endured every day, and if one must spend many hours in what shelters, truly, in what shelters, once upon a time, in shelters. In shelters, in what shelters today could we take refuge? Hour after hour, we used to stay in shelters once. Whole nights we spent in shelters. Whole days. How must one feel, those old conventional weapons as they are called? The familiar weapons we had back then, and yet the war was terrible. The Second World War. Terrible. What will the Third World War be? What will it be? So you understand that here we have something horrifying, truly horrifying. Notice that they have metallic breastplates. It says they are like iron breastplates, meaning they have a metallic covering. We find it hard to say that these are not aircraft, especially when it says they have stings in their tails. With authority to harm humans. In earlier times, I think it is no longer so. But in earlier times, the machine gun was in the tail of the aircraft. Back then, that is where the gunner sat. In the Wellingtons of 1940. I remember a wreck at Tatoy. Some of them served in the Air Force once. I remember then that this was the position of the gunner. So the authority is in the tail, neither more nor less. It shows that these locusts, and now I put the word locusts in quotation marks, carry armament. Their king, that is, their leader. As is known, locusts have no king. Bees have a queen and obey her most faithfully. But locusts have no king. They are without a ruler. That is why they move, as they please, however they wish. And that is why, eventually, locusts fall into the sea and drown. This is known. How then do these peculiar, strange, bizarre locusts have a king? This too shows that these are not locusts. And what is the name of this king? Abaddon, that is, Apollyon. It is well known, and this does seem to be the case, that the word Apollyon is a sarcastic rendering of the name Apollo. This name, Apollo, is derived, according to Archilochus of Paros in the 7th century before Christ, and later according to Aeschylus in his play Agamemnon, line 1082. And I give you the reference, from the verb apollomi, which means to destroy continuously, for olomi means to destroy, and apollomi means intensified destruction. That is why the lexicon of Liddell and Scott, says, to destroy utterly, and I looked it up so that I could give it to you this way. To kill, to slaughter. This is what Apollyon means. So then, the name of the king of the locusts hints at the destructive work of these strange satanic beings. It may also refer to terrible wars in which aircraft will be used, but they have already been used. For the first time in history, we have world wars, and for the first time in history, airplanes were used in these world wars, in the first and the second. The consequences of these airplanes, as you know, in the bombings are dreadful. I remember, I was small back then when the Second World War was happening. When London was being bombed, the newspapers wrote that the sun was darkened. I remembered it now as I was reading the Book of Revelation. I had only the image from back then. The airplanes, the German ones, were so many that the sun is darkened. And what was falling now from these airplanes upon London? Picture it in your mind. What was falling? Where the book of Revelation says here, regarding the locusts, there is an interpretation that the smoke is not smoke, but is the cloud of the locusts in the manner of smoke, which truly shadows the sun. This reminded me of how the presence of the airplanes shadowed the sky of London. The following are noteworthy from what the book of Revelation tells us. First, it was granted to them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. Authority was granted that they not kill the people, but torment them for 5 months. This, not killing, of course, is relative, because death is also present, but mainly, it is not so much death as the torment. On this point, Father Gavriel Dionysiates writes, who was for a series of years, for entire decades, abbot of the monastery of Dionysio. And I remember, in 1962, when we as a school had once visited the monastery of Dionysio on the Holy Mountain, he gave us a most vivid and beautiful tour through those famous frescoes, which show in a depicted, that is, painted manner. Outside the refectory of the monastery, that is, in the corridor, in a colonnade there, they show in colors the whole scene of the plagues of the apocalypse. What I am about to read to you, Father Gavriel published somewhere, and I read it to you word for word. The explanation, he writes, of this picture contains dreadful events, particularly of atomic energy. It depicts above an angel with an enormous trumpet calling to alarm, and below, monsters in the form of locusts and scorpions flying in the sky, from where they cast the star into the shaft of the abyss, and an enormous smoke came out, broadening at the top into the shape of a mushroom, and below the shaft of the abyss, a multitude of dead people, some in uniforms, others half naked, and others in their nightgowns. And on the left side, some living but disfigured. And these were painted 300 years ago from today, and some, he says, as though disfigured, who neither see, nor hear, nor are, Father Gavriel now explains. These are the survivors of Hiroshima in Japan, from the catastrophe of the atomic bomb, especially the small children among them, as eyewitness visitors to that city recount. These children remain at the same height as they were then. This is because the radiation from the bomb attacks the spinal column, so the body does not grow upward in height. Instead, it grows in width and becomes deformed, just as this painting portrays the survivors. That is, this image as it hangs there in the monastery. This is a second sign, and in those days, this is striking. I have not researched it, but it may well be the only place this expression appears. I am not certain. I did not look into it. It simply struck me. The phrase, in those days, which points to something that will be exclusively eschatological. For at no other point does the holy evangelist of the book of Revelation say, in those days. In those days, that is, men will seek death, and will not find it, and they will long to die, and death will flee from them. What does this mean? What can we discern from it? That they will seek to die and will not be able. That is to say, those who survive will seek to die and will not be able to die, because they will be tormented by the illnesses that the radiation, my beloved, will have brought upon them. I do not know how many causes there are, or which cause the illness of cancer may have. But one thing I do know, that one of the causes is also radiation, which produces cancer. This is well established. That is why the doctors tell us, do not undergo many radiation exposures. That is, do not have many X-rays, because you receive a great deal of radiation, since afterwards cancer is induced, leukemia, and so on. These are illnesses, it seems, which, as we already knew, truly torment human beings. Now, what illnesses? Only these, only from radiation. Is it not the horror? Is it not the derangement of mind? I cannot imagine that, standing before such a scene, before such a war, a person would not lose his reason. I cannot imagine it. Therefore, these must be illnesses of long duration, whether bodily or psychological or psychosomatic, mixed. It is worth noting that the first place among illnesses, especially in our own age, is held by psychological illnesses. This is noteworthy. But, my beloved, we could summarize what the apocalypse says here in terms of what is foreshadowed in that earlier prophecy, which God placed on the lips of Moses concerning the future of the Hebrews. If they should apostate from God, therefore, allow me to interpret prophecy by means of prophecy. For what is found in the Old Testament is itself prophecy. It is in Deuteronomy, in chapter 28, and it contains things fearful and many. I make a selection of a few points, so that one may see that those things which constitute prophecy come most likely to interpret another prophecy, the prophecy of the Apocalypse. I read to you. Note also that Moses speaks these words to the Hebrews, to the people of God. If the people apostasis, but do not forget that we now have the people of grace, who are the Christians. So the same plagues and the same curses fall upon human beings, upon the people of God who have apostatized. So let us not say that this concerns the Hebrews. No, it concerns the Christians as well, who are the people of God. Listen, and you will be terrified. And it shall come to pass, if you do not listen to the voice of the Lord your God, to keep and to do all his commandments, as many as I command you today, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. If you do not listen, all the curses will fall upon you. The Lord will strike you with the ulcer of Egypt in the seat, and with wild scab, and with itch, so that you cannot be healed. There will fall upon you, he says, ulcers, sores, wounds, in the seat. A wild scab, that is a terrible one, and an itch, so that you will not be able to be healed. The Lord will strike you with paralysis. The Lord will strike you with paralysis, with palsy, and with blindness, with loss of sight, and with derangement of mind, with madness. You will be left in a derangement of mind, in madness, and you shall be driven out of your senses by the sights your eyes will see. You will be left speechless, and beside yourself at the things your eyes behold. They will see terrible slaughters and disasters, and what you look upon will drive you mad. The Lord shall strike you with a malignant sore. He will strike you with a malignant ulcer, like cancer, upon the knees and upon the legs, so that you cannot be healed. From the sole of your feet to the crown of your head, from the nails of your toes all the way to your head, you will be covered with sores like these. And there the Lord will give you a despairing heart. He will give you melancholy and failing eyes and a wasting soul. Your eyes will have grown dim, and your soul will waste away. Sicknesses of the soul. In the morning you will say, in the morning you will say, would that it were evening, if only it would become evening. And in the evening you will say, would that it were morning. And in the evening you will say, when will it dawn? Because of the fear in your heart with which you will be afraid, and because of the sights your eyes will see, from the fear of your heart, and from the things your eyes will see, this, my beloved, is the torment. This is the affliction. This is the torment, in which you are tormented without ever dying. But we will continue next Sunday.